Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. The basic premise on which we operate this show is that all kids have the natural ability to learn. As a matter of fact, we all have a natural ability to learn. This is for all parents, teachers, and students who truly want to succeed. To get more information on the material we will cover today, you can go to www.howtolearneasily.com, or if you have any questions or stories you'd like to share with us, please email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com.
Today's very special guest is Dr. Robin Odegaard. Did I say that right?
You did, Odegaard, yes.
That's very good. It's almost as bad as my family name, Boswava.
Exactly.
I have to spell it 30 times a day. So, familiarly called Doc Robin, our Doc Robin, holds a doctorate in psychology, specializing in the area of organization and concentrating in sport and performance. Doc's experience actually is rather unusual for a doctorate. She actually spent 14 years in corporate America before going on to college to do her master's and doctorate degrees. Doc Robin has incorporated her training as a psychologist in the corporate world and academic and athletic. So Doc Robin has incorporated her corporate training, the academic work she's done, and her athletic experience with strategies usually reserved for organizational development in the high-level corporate world with executive coaching to create her life-changing message for college students. She is the president of Champion Performance Development and the founder of the Stop the Drama campaign and the author of the book Stop the Drama, The Ultimate Guide to Female Teams. So we welcome Doc Robin, and we're going to have a wonderful program here. So Doc, give us a capsule view of the whole premise behind the book and the Stop the Drama campaign and how parents can use this.
Okay, great. Absolutely, Roger. Thanks so much. The first thing I want to start with is that in large corporations and in executive coaching, I noticed that a lot of what I was doing is teaching them how to have conflict, how to communicate with one another, how to work together. And when I started working with athletic teams, college teams and college coaches, I noticed they were having the same kind of issues, the same kind of conflict, the same kind of communication problems. And I thought, well, why hasn't anybody taken all this knowledge we have in the corporate world for executive coaching and organizational development and applied it at the college level,
right,
where they can use it directly in college and then take it with them into the corporate world? Why are we waiting till they get into the corporate world to try and train them? So I started first at the individual level teaching young women how to have productive conflict and healthy communication, and then to teams, and I did what I call coaching with coaches and taught them how to, and I just was really successful with it. And so I think that what parents can do is the same kind of thing. They can take these skills and they can use them to communicate with each other, which obviously will model good behavior for their children. They can use it to speak to their children's teachers, and they can also start incorporating it into how they speak to their children, and then their children will develop the skills as they mature to have good communication and productive conflict rather than what they see on reality TV, which is just, I mean, you know, is so awful right now with the gossip and the backstabbing and the screaming
standards.
And it's just so awful.
That's good. It's time actually for clear thinking people to put out more optimum relationship standards instead of watching television and getting the wrong idea. I know, I mean, I'm 75 years old now, and I remember going back and looking at the standards that were set on the movies in those days, the way people related with each other and dealt with each other, and how it's changed. And the standards of conduct are very, behavior with people are very different nowadays. And I think it's majorly an influence of television and the cinema. How would a parent apply this, and what are some of the specifics that a parent might use with their child?
Well, I think the first thing that parents need to recognize is that everyone has an individual communication fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it a communication fingerprint because it is literally unique to each person. How you communicate, what words mean to you,
right.
What different bodily reaction, the English, body English you put into words,
mm-hmm.
It depends on your upbringing, on that kind of thing. And
right.
So a family unit may use a word one way, or it may mean something, or the way your face, like if I say, yeah, right, and my eyes look away and I kind of shrug, that means different than I say, oh, yeah, right. And I really am really emphatic about it. So when your child takes that individual communication fingerprint and goes out into the world, the way they interpret how other people speak may be different than what other people mean. And
right.
So parents need to recognize that they're creating a fingerprint and that their child needs to be able to recognize that other people may communicate differently and they're going to have to explain more. And I know from past radio shows that you've done that you talk a lot about the definition of words.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. The definition of, I use the word respect when I explain it to people because that word means something very different to different people.
I noticed in the material concerning your book and services, because you do a lot of consulting as well, don't you?
I do coaching, I do consulting. I am creating Stop the Drama boot camps
mm-hmm.
for parents and teachers mm-hmm. and coaches and athletes. Yeah.
If folk, get ready with your pens and pencils, folk. Robin, where would they contact you to find out about this and get involved in this sort of thing?
Okay, they can come.
If interested.
They can come to my website,
mm-hmm.
which I, as you mentioned at the top of the show, mm-hmm. I am the owner of Champion Performance Development, and the website for that is champperformance.com. And that's two P's in the middle. I know a lot of people ask me that question.
Mm-hmm.
So champ, one word, and then performance, the second word, .com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can. There's a lot of information there. I blog there about different communication and conflict strategies. And they can contact me there. There's a contact page where they can send me an email address, an email, and my address is there and that kind of thing.
You've got a second website as well, I found.
The second one isn't...
You want to mention that?
It's not complete yet.
But
the
okay.
Facebook page is up for the Stop the Drama campaign. And from champperformance.com, there is a button there. And
okay.
they can click on it, and it'll take them over to the Stop the Drama campaign Facebook page, and they can join the campaign there if they'd like.
Oh, okay. Because I remember in the notes about your services and your book I was reading, you made a very valid point that you can know what people say,
mm-hmm.
but you don't know why they said it.
Right,
so
exactly.
I think that's a good point to explain, eh?
Well, and it's funny because I often say when I speak to people, you can't observe why. You can make it up, and we do.
Yeah.
We make it up a lot.
And you can really cause some strife when you do.
Right, you know, exactly. And the example I often use is when you see someone run a red light, what's your reaction?
Mm.
Oh, they're an idiot. Well, that's a pretty permanent response to somebody who may not just be paying attention. So you're making up why. Well, they
right.
ran a red light because they're an idiot, rather than because they were distracted or because they decided they were going too fast and didn't want to spill their coffee or whatever other reason there might be. You just made
right.
up something.
So what are some other words of wisdom you'd like to give our good listeners? Of course, we got these two sheets here.
We do. One thing, I can add about the why.
Yeah, the why.
Since parents, children ask why incessantly to the point that parents will say, because. And we tend to squelch that in them. We tell them not to ask why so often. And unfortunately, because we tell them not to ask why or don't give them useful answers as to why, that's how we start teaching our children to make up why.
Yeah.
So that's something parents can be aware of.
That's a very important point. I mean, I remember having the because run on me when I was young.
Yes, exactly.
It turned me off.
Exactly.
Parents are idiots, and you go somewhere else to go with your mates and enjoy life, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so parents, be warned. If you want to turn your kids off,
tell them because I said so.
Well, it's only because, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I see you got your 7 no-fail secrets to stop the drama.
Yeah, I did. These I came up with actually when I was working with teams. And these, I didn't just make these up randomly. Uh-huh. This is from actual work I did with teams and with athletes to help them. Like, I recognized errors they were making in their communication. Yeah. And I created these 7 no-fail secrets to stop the drama to help them communicate more effectively and to help reduce defensiveness and reduce the cattiness that can sometimes happen when conflict happens. So, and your listeners can come to chantperformance.com and send me a note requesting, and I will gladly send them this list of the 7 no-fail secrets to stop the drama. All they have to do is ask. It's something I'll send them for free.
Shall we go through these? I was reading these earlier, and it reminded me, I coached a team in Australia in my younger days. It was in Australia, the Surf Life Saving Club is a big movement.
Okay.
There's 38 distinct different surfing beaches in Sydney, and each one has its surf club.
Mm-hmm.
And our club had 300 members. It's all the local lads, and their job is to look after the idiot tourists who get in the wrong part of the beach and get swept off to New Zealand. We save them before they get to New Zealand. So I was coaching the competition team and so on and so forth. And it was interesting watching the dynamics after reading your material, comparing the dynamics that could have been among the club members who are all supposed to be, you know, getting on along together and what actually goes on.
Right.
You use the word bitchiness, presumably a female phenomenon.
Of course, only women behave that way.
That's true. We men have a different word for it, I think, but whatever it is, it's probably changed in the years since I was that way.
Well, men tend to be very black and white when they argue.
Yeah.
There's a winner and there's a loser. And the winner gets his way and the loser shuts up. Whereas women, when we have conflict, it's not so black and white. There's cliques, and there's you said this and she said that, and then there's a third party who's like, wait, let's not argue, and it's not nearly as clear. And so you end up, when I was less than 10, and I can remember my father saying, boys are so easy. They get into a fist fight and they get it over with. Girls will hold a grudge for 20 years.
Yeah. The boys will often get into a fight and then become best buddies.
Well, and that's because it's very clear. It's not as crazy as you might think.
Yeah.
It's very clear, and I call it the king of the jungle mentality.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm a boy and I get into a fight with you and you win, it's silly for me to continue to fight with you because you were the winner. Whereas if I align myself with you, now I can be part of the winning team as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the way boys and men tend to think, is they align themselves with the winner.
I wrote a piece some years ago that you took issue with me when I first mentioned it. I viewed it, the women are actually better managers, though men may well dominate in the executive suite.
Mm.
And the reason why women tend to be better managers that I observed in corporate America is they tend to want to exchange understandings and, you know, work together, whereas men want to dominate and somebody's got to rule.
Well, and women work together as long as they're working together. But when they stop working together, then they cease to work
nasty,
together.
So we have these 7 no-fail secrets to stop the drama. How about we go through them? These really got my attention.
So the first one that I have at the top, and these are they're not necessarily in order of importance. They're just kind of in an order because you have to put them in an order when you type them up. So they can be used in any order, obviously. The top one I have here is speak from the I. And what that means is start your sentences with I think, I feel, my perspective was, my experience was, rather than you did this, you did that, you made this happen, you made me angry.
Right.
And so you need to own your own things. If I say I feel, then there's space for you to be able to have a different feeling or a different opinion about what happened.
Right. And you're actually describing the fact of what you feel rather than making a false accusation of what you did to cause the feeling, which may not be true.
Right, exactly. And I can tell you, if I had ownership of other people's feelings, angry, frustrated, mad, those are not feelings I would make them feel. So obviously it's ridiculous to say someone made you feel something. They don't make you anything.
Very good. Number 2?
So the second one is allow yourself space to feel, which means a lot of times in a conversation, especially as it becomes heated, it'll run away with the person and forget what you're feeling and what's going on. And you just, the feelings just build and they happen and you don't put words on them. You don't take the time to actually feel them. And stuff comes flying out of your mouth that right. you may not actually intend to have said. I mean, right. we've all had that experience. So give yourself space in a conversation to actually feel what you're feeling rather than letting it run away with you. And once you've managed to do that...
You're a saint.
Well, the next part is then you've got that internal dialogue that's going on in your mm-hmm. head whenever a conversation is happening. There's kind of three parts to a conversation. There's what you're saying, there's what I'm saying, and then there's what's going on in my head. And then the fourth one is what's going on in your head, but I right. have no privy to that. I right. only know three pieces of the four. So if I can then take my feelings and put that internal dialogue into words, suddenly you're privy to what's going on in my head. And mm-hmm. if I'm making up stuff that's not true, it gives you the opportunity to say, oh, wait, that's, no, let's not go down that path. That's not what I meant. Whereas if I don't give you privy to what's going on in my head, we may go down a path that has nothing to do with anything because mm-hmm. I'm making assumptions that I think you mean that you may not actually mean. So put your internal dialogue, that stuff in your head, into words and explain it to the other person. Okay. That
I
makes
dig
sense.
It. That
Good.
That makes sense to me.
All right.
Then I'm a sensible person.
Oh, well, lucky for us.
Right. Next.
The next one I have is assume the positive. In my book, I talk about that people think there's tigers behind every tree, and so they always assume negative things, and people are going to jump out at them and be mean to them. But usually, most people aren't out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Not most of the time, most people are not out to get you. So if you can assume that when someone's talking to you or having a disagreement with you, that they actually are coming from a good place, that they want to be a better teammate, they want to actually resolve the problem, not make it worse. If you can assume that they're coming from a positive place, the conversation is likely to go much more effectively. Mm-hmm. So assume the positive.
That is true, and it certainly influences the person you're dealing with.
Right. If I assume that you're
much
a good
better.
Guy
yeah.
rather than a bad guy,
right.
we're probably going to have a better conversation.
Yeah. It's interesting. Folk really don't appreciate enough, I feel, just how much this mental stuff gets in the way. I mean, you mm-hmm. walk in, everybody knows that it's true. You can go to a restaurant and it has a wonderful atmosphere. So,
mm-hmm.
like, what's behind the atmosphere? How
mm-hmm.
come?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what causes it, this mental kind of stuff.
Right, the ability to kind of take the temperature of the
yeah.
energy that's
yeah.
going on.
Some
yeah.
people you like instinctively and others you don't. So obviously thinking positively toward a person does influence them.
Right.
Before you open your mouth. In fact, mm-hmm. One of my oldest, wisest gurus told me many years ago that sales are won and lost before you open your mouth. And,
yeah.
and this is the factor behind it. Next.
All right, so the next one is actually takes place before you start a conversation. And this it says, ask before providing feedback. And what that means is that nobody likes to be blindsided with constructive criticism, which a lot of people use that word as an excuse to be mean. And it's not. The whole point of it being constructive is that it's supposed to be coming from a good place,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually supposed to be helpful. What I found when I kind of make this rule for teams that they have to ask before providing feedback is it makes the person think, why am I giving this feedback? What is the purpose behind it?
Right.
If I come up to you and I say, hey, Roger, I've got something I need to talk to you about, is now a good time? It gives you that half a second to go, oh, okay, there's going to be a conversation. There might be some constructive criticism. Yes, I'm prepared for that. Or if you're having a really bad day or it's just not a good time or you're running between meetings or something, or whatever, you can say, you know, Robin, right now is not really good for me. Can you catch me after lunch? And we get to have a conversation about it before I just come up to you and say, hey, I don't like the way you did XYZ. And now suddenly you're not in a good place. You're back on your heels. You're defensive right from the get-go. So asking before you provide feedback kind of sets the foundation to have a positive conversation. Yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of times in relationships or with children, parents will say, oh, we need to talk. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, that's just dripping with, oh, no, what did I do now? That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, hey, I want to talk to you about something and in a positive way from
right.
a positive place
yes.
that I think will help you as a person. That's kind of the energy that needs to have in it.
And actually, as a parent, if you do that with your children, you actually are asking permission of them to be able to speak to them about something but it also treats them as an individual, not, mm-hmm. you know, a thinking, feeling, understanding individual, not just a piece of, I don't know, I hate to put it this way, but a piece of chattel that they're a piece of property that, you know, they're in charge of raising them, but you know what? They're individuals and they need to be treated that way.
Yeah, it gives them ownership of self. Next one is create and use a team vocabulary. And I know that sounds really athletic, and I will grant you that it was developed in an athletic setting, but I know that families do it as well, that if the same thing comes up over and over and over and needs to be communicated on a regular basis, create a word or phrase in a given context that means a given thing. So, for example, I'll give you an athletic example. I worked with a team that they had several players on the team that could get really negative during competitions. And they would just go down this really negative path, and it would drag the team down.
Right.
And then the team didn't really know what to do about it. So what we did is we sat down and talked about kind of the effect that it had on the team when the people did this. And those players said, wow, you know, we don't even realize we were doing that.
Right.
And so I said, well, let's come up with a way that we can really quickly say to you, hey, you know, this isn't working for us, and I know you're in a bad place. Maybe you need to take a walk. Maybe. And we talked about it as a team, and they came up with the word stress. And so for that team, when someone said, hey, that sounds like that's really stressing you, maybe you need to go for a walk for a minute, that was a kind of a red flag to that player to say, okay, I'm kind of getting down into a negative place, and let me take a break. And it was meant in a positive way. It was a good thing. It was a way for the team to work together.
Help them correct themselves.
Right, and it was really quick.
I'm just curious, did you ever find that any teams might, or any players on the teams might have abused that to a certain degree? In other words, I'm not quite sure how to put it, but maybe overused that kind of thing.
The vocabulary itself,
yes.
You mean?
Yes.
That was not the experience I had, but that's because I think we kind of set up right up front. There was a discussion about what does this word mean? Under what conditions do you use it? And not only that, but the team held each other accountable really successfully to it. So I didn't experience it as their consultant, but I have no doubt that if someone used it out of turn, they'd get called on it.
Yeah.
Because that was the place that team was in. And that's, I think, what families can do as well, is that if you have a discussion with something and there's an understood point where it's supposed to be used, if it gets used out of turn, then people are like, wait, that's not how that's supposed to be. And there's an accountability factor to it.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah, you can't use these sort of things as a put down or destructive, with destructive
then they use
intent.
They lose their meaning, and then there's no point in it. So and so every family's going to have different ones. You know, I've had teams that use the word settle to mean focus and do, you know, let's play brave and play effectively. Mm-hmm. Whatever words work for you, just make sure, and they can be nonsensical words. It's literally just something that means something to the group, that the team, the family, whatever unit you're trying to communicate with.
That's neat. I like that. As an old team player, team member, I was silly enough to play rugby in my youth.
But actually, as somebody coming from a family who didn't communicate all that well, except in negatives, quite honestly, I find it very interesting. I wish that we had something like that going on, because I think we probably would have had a lot less strife in our family life, and a lot less of the parenting where it's I say what happens and it's because I tell you to do it, and it just seems like it would have been a lot more of a more comfortable family life.
Well, and one thing I think that parents need to remember is that children are not just adults in little bodies. Their brains are still developing. How they communicate, how they use words, how things work together for them is still developing. And so these are really abstract, and you can use them effectively. They work to communicate, especially with adults. You can teach children how to use them, but sometimes they're going to make mistakes and they're not going to use them as effectively as adults, and that's okay. They're still growing. All right, so the next one after creating a team vocabulary, and this one is really important, is know when to call an emotional timeout. Know when a conversation is no longer being productive, when the emotional state of the participants has reached a point where it's just out of control. And I'm not saying that means you take the conversation and you stick it under a carpet somewhere. No, I'm just saying have a way that as a team or as a family that you say, hold on, this is getting out of control. Let's take a break. Let's all take a walk, take a breather, whatever, and let's reconvene in 20 minutes, in 2 days. I mean, however long it takes you guys to calm down.
Cool down, yeah.
And reach a point where, okay, let's now restart and have a constructive conversation. But the bottom line is, and this is a hard and fast rule to calling an emotional timeout, you don't just say, time out, I don't want to talk about it anymore. You say, okay, I need a break. Let's take a break from this conversation. Let's come back in. And you say when you're going to bring the conversation back up, because you don't want serious issues, emotional issues, to get buried.
Right.
So there has to be a time when it comes back to the table. And the rule that I create for teams is that the person who calls the emotional timeout is responsible for bringing the conversation back to the table. So there's an ownership there.
That sounds very good.
So that's how that works.
And actually, I have to relate something personal there. And despite the fact that Roger and I have eternal harmony, well, maybe not eternal, but anyway, we have great harmony. There are times that I just like to hit him upside the head. He drives me nuts sometimes. And this emotional break is exactly what I have to get to put in every once in a while, because I get so caught up in the emotions and feelings. I say, you know what? I'm going to say something I'm going to regret and I can't take it back. So I usually just be quiet. I will say, okay, I can't talk about this anymore. Let me go off and figure out what I'm feeling and get myself figured out. And then I will come back to you and we can finish this conversation, but we can get to a resolution is the thing I want. Mm-hmm. So personally, yes, I know exactly what this is all about.
Okay, Doc Robin, that's a wonderful spot to end off for this week's program. We will be coming back with Doc Robbins again next week, folks, and she will be continuing on with her 9 Secrets to Great Teamwork. Now, this is actually a wonderful program that she has put together here on this 9 Secrets to Great Teamwork. It works for families. Of course, it works for sports teams. It works for any type of teams, corporate teams, and I'm sure you'll want to learn these secrets, so be here next week with The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia to hear Doc Robin and a part two of our interview with her where she tells us the 9 secrets of great teamwork.
This has been The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. Our basic premise is that all children learn naturally. It's a natural ability we all have. To get more information on our material, you can go to www.howtolearneasily.com. Or if you have any questions or stories you'd like to send us, you can email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com.